Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Monica Brain. Tribes are weighing in on a fight between the state of South Dakota and the federal government over 4th of July fireworks at Mount Rushmore. The tribes object to the display. Also, a school district in Nebraska is facing a lawsuit after a staff member cut two Lakota students' hair. Our own Andy Murphy has insights into native corn processing. And CNN parted ways with former Senator Rick Santorum after his controversial comments about Native Americans. He says he was savaged for telling the truth. All of that is coming up next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A First Nations hockey player in Canada is speaking out after receiving racist messages on social media. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, Ethan Bear has played with the Edmonton Oilers of the National Hockey League since 2018.
The racist remarks came in the wake of the Oilers losing four straight games in their first playoff series. His girlfriend posted on Facebook that Bear has received numerous racist messages and comments. She added that to hide behind a screen is cowardly, but to use stereotypes against him as an Indigenous person is dehumanizing and awful. Bear grew up on the Ochapaways First Nation in Saskatchewan. He issued a statement saying he's been subject to racist behavior on social media.
I'm here to stand up to this behavior, to these comments. I'm proud of where I come from. I'm proud to be from Ochapaways First Nation. And I'm not just doing this for myself. I'm doing this for all people of color. I'm doing this for the next generation to help make change. There's no place for racism in our communities, in sports, or in our workplace.
Bear's girlfriend, Lanesha Ned, also appeared on the video saying she and Bear want to use the platform to shift the way young Indigenous children and those of color experience growing up. The Edmonton Oilers Hockey Club also issued a statement calling the racist remarks disgusting and cowardly. The team's general manager, Ken Holland, described Bear as an unbelievable young man and a skilled hockey player, and a tremendous role model for all young athletes, especially in the Indigenous community. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Megazee Communications, a nonprofit serving Native youth in the Twin Cities in Minnesota, is hosting a community walk Friday, marking a year after George Floyd was murdered during an encounter with police. Executive Director Kelly Drummer says not only did it create pain in the community, but Megazee's building caught fire and was lost during protests in Minneapolis.
Our building was not targeted. We were just the victim of, you know, really our location being so close to the third precinct. I spent all three nights of the unrest at the building and really praying, hoping, wishing that our building would not suffer any harm. But in the end, the cinders from the fires around us started our roof on fire. And so for our youth and the community, it was really, really devastating.
The walk is to remember the life of Floyd, hold a memorial for the group's previous space, reflect on the year, and look to the future.
All in all, after the loss of our building, we really hit the ground running. We had summer programming at the American Indian Center, the American OIC. Most recently in March, we moved into a temporary space and we purchased a new building the end of January at 18th and Lake Street, which is about 7 blocks from our former building, and really look forward to what's happened over the past year and walking to our new building and blessing our new space with the community.
Megazee's new space is expected to open in May 2022. The organization works to empower young people with training in media, green industry, and provide academic and cultural resources to students around the Twin Cities. The leader of the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma has approved legislation providing a lump sum payment of $2,000 to each of the tribe's citizens. Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. signed the legislation Thursday for the assistance for all of the Cherokee Nation's more than 390,000 citizens. The funds are from $1.8 billion provided to the tribe through President Biden's American Rescue Plan to help recover from the pandemic. The Cherokee Nation also laid out its spending plans, which includes addressing mental health and wellness, assistance for small businesses, infrastructure improvements, and support for education, housing, and job training. The tribe already received the allocation from the Treasury Department. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by Western Governors University, where students apply what they already know, learn at their own pace, and graduate sooner with little or no debt. Information and application at wgu.edu/degrees. Support by the American Indian College Fund, providing scholarships to Native students of every age for over 30 years. Applications for the upcoming school year accepted through May 31st at collegefund.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain. Parents of Lakota students in a school district in Nebraska say a staff member cut their kid's hair while checking for lice. The parents are suing the school district, claiming the act violated their Lakota cultural beliefs. We'll talk to the parents today about what happened. Also, South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem is taking on the federal government after the state was refused a fireworks permit on the 4th of July at Mount Rushmore National Park. We'll hear from the chairman of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe about why they are weighing in on this issue. And the host of the Toasted Sister podcast, Andy Murphy, is going to drop by and talk about an episode she produced for the America's Test Kitchen Proof podcast about corn and indigenous science. But first, former Senator Rick Santorum says he was savaged for telling the truth after CNN parted ways with him for some comments he made about the United States and Native Americans. Here's what he said to the Young Americans Foundation in April.
We came here and created a blank slate. We birthed a nation from nothing. I mean, there was nothing here. I mean, yes, we have Native Americans, but candidly, that there isn't much Native American culture in American culture.
After several Native organizations criticized his comments and called for him to be fired, CNN decided to part ways, cut Santorum loose as a commentator after 4 years. Here he is on Fox talking about his experience.
You know, what I said was not at all disparaging toward Native Americans. What I was talking about is the founding of the United States of America, and that Native Americans did not have a role in the founding of our country. Now, you can say that's a bad thing or a good thing, or the way we treated Native Americans were bad, but I was giving a talk to a group of young people talking about the founding principles of religious liberty and how important it was to the immigrants who came here to found this country, and that was an important value that was imbued into our Constitution. One of the things I'm concerned about is that you get savaged by telling the truth. And I told the truth here.
And joining us now to discuss this is Lachey Wesley. She is the Rapid Response Campaign Manager at Illuminative, and she is Choctaw. Welcome to Native America Calling, Lachey.
Thank you for having me, Monica.
So your thoughts about Senator Santorum's original comments and his response after he was fired?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I feel, the need to take a collective deep breath probably with all of your listeners right now. When his initial comments that were made at the Young Americas Foundation, I mean, initially I just felt angry. It's incredibly offensive. It's false. Whitewashes Native people's history and our contributions. And what is most upsetting is he made those comments in front of young people. About his comments this week on Fox News, I'm not surprised one bit he was on Fox News. His word choice was unfortunate. It's just further proof of, I think, his arrogance, his ignorance. I mean, he was a former senator, a campaign for the Republican presidential nomination. He knows how his word choice can impact the tone of a conversation and messaging. And he knew what he was doing, and it's very unfortunate.
Are you speaking specifically when you say word choice about the word savaged?
Yes, I am.
I mean, do you think that, what do you think about the fact that, you know, he's claiming that, you know, I watched the whole interview on I think it was Hannity, and he said that he walked back some of his statements, he clarified things, and that, you know, they sort of presented it as that was not enough. And, you know, the mob came for him. And I'm just wondering, you know, what you think about these assertions that when folks speak out against something that they feel is said been offensive and maybe that person loses their job, you know, that this is chilling free speech.
Yes. Rick Santorum on Fox News, he says, you know, he was attacked by CNN, by other people for telling the truth. But he also said that CNN has a right to fire me. And that's what they did. I think if people say racist comments, there is a possibility that they could be fired. And Rick Santorum said himself that CNN had a right to fire him. And he's not being silenced. He still has, you know, he was still invited on Fox News to speak his opinion.
Right. Like he, it's not like he can never speak again in any other form or area, or that he won't be asked back to give an interview on CNN. He just is not going to be a commentator on CNN anymore. That's my understanding of the situation. So, Lachey, what's the bigger conversation here? You know, we learn a little bit about history. It's an opportunity to learn a little bit about history, but also to talk a little bit about just how natives are viewed in the mainstream media.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this firing of Rick Santorum really is a first step for CNN, also the larger, you know, news organizations. And, you know, we worked with many native-led organizations on an effort to hopefully get Rick Santorum to be fired, but this was always just a first step. You know, us, along with many other activists, Native-led organizations, and celebrities in an open letter, called on CNN to fire Rick Santorum to end their contract, but we also called on them to put in place anti-bias training. We want them to update their standards and policies so that they respect and understand Native American communities. And the hope is that they will go on to establish an Indigenous Affairs desk. This is a major, really, I see it as an opportunity for CNN to set a real high bar for other news organizations and cover Native American communities correctly.
I want to throw that out there to our listeners. If you want to weigh in on Senator Santorum's comments and his parting ways with CNN, the number to join us is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Lachey, I'm going to let you go, but I'm curious, you know, any thoughts about, like, what's next in terms of sort of furthering this conversation?
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, this is an opportunity for news organizations to take a look at their policies internally and diversify their staff and make sure that Native communities are represented both on the staff but also at their organization.
Yeah, absolutely. Lachey, hang on one second. Let's take a few calls. We've got Melvin in Santee, Nebraska, tuned in on KZYK. Hey there, Melvin.
Comment is, thank God he's an ex-senator.
But, yeah.
The other part about it is, I'm glad CNN stepped up and set an example for the other news agencies to, we deal with enough racism day to day. We don't need to come home and hear it on the TV from a commentator with a news organization like that, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, he never researched or he doesn't know history. He's an ex-senator from Pennsylvania who should have known his history. you know, that Benjamin Franklin had met with the Iroquois and the Six Nations people and put the Constitution together from their meeting. You know, most of us here in Sioux Country learned that. I don't know why he can't, you know.
Yeah. Melvin, thanks for your comments. Appreciate it. Let's go to Aubrey in Albuquerque, tuned in on KUNM. Hey there, Aubrey.
Hey, how are you?
Good, good. We're getting close to the break. What do you want to share?
No, no worries. I spent a couple different summers back in early 2000s with the Navajo Nation out in Montezuma Creek, Utah. And several of my lifetime friends live out there. They are natives. They love their country. They love the reservation. And they love their people. And I think these comments from Santorum were just honestly poisonous and further perpetuates the distance between American government and the different native tribes and their government.
Do you think there's a moment maybe for Senator Santorum to I don't know, be educated on this, Aubrey?
Oh, 100% he needs to be educated. I also think he missed his moment to make it better when he was further asked for a question and he just further dug the trench and used inappropriate words like savaged and other things to just further dig the hole.
Yeah. Aubrey, thanks for giving us a call. We appreciate it. And I should mention, I did reach out to Senator Santorum on Twitter to see if he wanted to join us. I didn't hear back, but he is always welcome on the show to talk about what he would like to share regarding this issue. And if you're just joining us, it is our monthly news roundup today. We are talking about Senator Rick Santorum's comments. He parted ways with CNN because of his comments about Native America and there being nothing here before the colonists came. I'll take a few more calls after the break on this. If you want, give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. We talked with Lachey Wesley. She's the Rapid Response Campaign Manager for the organization Illuminative. If you want to learn more about what they're working on, you can go to our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. We've got a link to their website on ours. And it's our news roundup. So if you want to weigh in with anything that we're talking about today, give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. You can also, there's a couple other ways to reach out to us. You can tweet us at 1-800-99-NATIVE or send us an email, comments@NativeAmericaCalling.com. Our next show is one of our favorites from the archive. The familiar characters from the Super Indian series return. It's a new radio theater podcast by Aragon Stars Resium Studios and Native Voices at the Autry. It reintroduces us to the main character and his friends who first appeared on the radio years ago. We'll hear more about it on the next Native America Calling.
Support by Roswell Park, who know tribal communities face persistent challenges in health equity, such as cancer and higher death rates. The Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center is dedicated to advancing cancer research that will lead to translatable science, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations worldwide. Are you at high risk for cancer? A no-charge online assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
You're tuned in to Native America Calling. I'm senior producer Monica Brain. It's our regular monthly news roundup show. And before the break, we were talking about former Senator Rick Santorum's comments about Native Americans. I want to take a call on this. We've got Stephanie in Albuquerque tuned in on KUNM. Hey there, Stephanie.
Hi.
Hi. What are you thinking?
I think this is such a perfect moment to point out how people in power or in powerful positions or platforms can be so ignorant about simple truths. And I think that this is a really good learning opportunity, a really good opportunity for education for Rick Santorum and others like him, to be schooled on how offensive his ignorant comment was.
What would you say to him?
What would I say to Rick Santorum?
Yeah.
I would say, Mr. Santorum, you've been given this platform where you get to say whatever is on your mind, the least you could do is be prepared and educated before you make such a comment that this nation was built on nothing, when in fact a bunch of white people like me stole it from the Native Americans.
All right.
And I, you know,
yeah.
That's how I feel.
Thanks, Stephanie. It's great to hear from you. Appreciate you listening on KUNM. And, you know, Stephanie's talking about education, and our next news item takes place inside a school district. So I mentioned earlier in the intro, there's a lawsuit. The American Civil Liberties Union of Nebraska has filed a complaint against the Cody Kilgore School District in Nebraska over haircutting of two Lakota children. Joining us now is Alice Johnson and Norma Leroy. They're the parents of students at the Cody Kilgore School District in Nebraska, and they are Rosebud Sioux. Welcome, Alice.
Hi, Monica. Thanks for having us.
Yep. And welcome, Norma.
Hello, Monica. Thanks for having us on air.
Yeah, we appreciate it. So, Alice, let's start with you. When did you first notice that your children's hair had been cut?
On March 2nd of last year, my girls had come home from school, and they were talking about it amongst themselves. And they had mentioned that the school secretary had cut their hair. And then I was in shock, and I started questioning them. The following day, on March 4th, the secretary actually called me after I had told them not to cut any more hair. The secretary had called me and told me that she was performing headlights checks on our daughter and said that she had cut their hair again. And that's when we attended a school board meeting about it, voiced our concerns, educated them. And I had contacted the ACLU of Nebraska.
I'm so confused by this. I'll be honest. When I was a kid, I had head lice a lot. And, it was just this, like, constant battle in our house and things like that. And I remember my mom cut my hair short because she just didn't want to, like, drag the comb through my hair and things like that. But there was never any discussion at schools about the school cutting hair. And how did they cut your kids' hair? And what did they say about why?
Yeah, I don't think that's a discussion that any parent should ever have to even think of having with the school.
Yeah.
So they were doing the head lice checks, and she would get, like, a bunch of hair in one little area and snip it down to the scalp. And then she would choose out the piece that she, in her words, thought that had head lice.
Okay. And then, and did your kids have it?
No.
So they cut your kids' hair, and when you went to the school board meeting, Norma, what did you share at the school board meeting about why this is not okay for you and your children?
Well, Native Americans are not supposed to cut their hair until it's full moon or you're mourning the loss of a loved one. The reason why we cut our hair is because it's part of our spirit and it grows with us. And once that hair is cut, our spirit is no longer happy. We're just sad because of these actions took upon our children.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. Alice, did you feel like the school, I guess my first question is, you know, are there any other Native faculty or, you know, anyone at that school that's Native that maybe would have understood this?
There are no Native American faculty members here. At the time, there wasn't. And there's very few Native American students that go to school here. I would say a handful of Native American students go to school here. I would definitely say that our children were singled out only because it was our children's classrooms that had the head lice checks. It wasn't the whole school. It was their classrooms. Also, there was a school head lice policy in the student handbook, a written school head lice policy in the student handbook, stating that students will have head lice checks. If they have head lice, they will be sent home till they're clean. And the attorney, the school superintendent responded by saying they were following an unwritten head lice policy for Native American students.
Specifically for Native American students?
Yes.
Did they expand on that? That somehow like head lice is different for Native students, or I'm so confused by this.
Yeah. No, they never specified.
I will say I reached out to the Cody Kilgore School District and invited them to be on the show today, and I did not hear back, but we'll keep reaching out to them because we want to hear, you know, their perspective on this. Do you feel like, Alice, do you feel like this is a misunderstanding about how to prevent head lice in school, or is something bigger going on here?
I don't believe it's a misunderstanding because when the hair was first cut on March 2nd, I had reached out to the school and I told them, please do not touch a hair on my child's head. And exactly on March 4th, the secretary called and said, Alice, I cut their hair again. So I don't think it was a misunderstanding at all.
Well, you know, I know that ACLU is involved in this. And so can you tell me what the basis of the lawsuit is, or, you know, what exactly you're hoping to accomplish with the lawsuit?
I think I'll have to defer that back to Mrs. Godinez.
Yeah.
Who is the ACLU attorney. Yeah.
We can reach out to them and speak with them as well about this. So I'm curious, Norma, what did your kids share with you about, you know, how they felt about having their hair cut by the school secretary?
They were sad when I'd asked them. I got them alone and I'd asked them what they had felt, and all they just had to say was, Miss Lochterman cut my hair, and my moms won't let anyone cut our hair, and it broke my heart to hear your child say that someone cut their hair. Mm. I haven't touched their hairs since they were babies. I haven't cut their hairs since they were babies. It broke my heart to hear my child say that.
Alice, did you take the opportunity to talk to them about the significance? I'm sure you talked about it before, but to talk to them more about the significance of our hair and, you know, when we do cut our hair and when we don't?
Yeah, the girls were raised that way. They grew up knowing that they don't cut their hair, and that we do it during a certain moon phase. So they were well aware of it, and they knew that it was wrong that their hair had been cut.
Well, go ahead, Alice.
Their children, and they, you know, this was an adult who had did this to them.
How are things at the school now?
It's, you could, you know, we're not allowed in the school now.
Why is that?
I have no trust in the school. We don't know.
You were told you're not allowed to come into the school.
No, they stop us at the doors. They don't allow us into the school.
Are there any other parents that are not permitted into the school?
No.
Okay. Well, Alice and Norma, we thank you both for sharing your experience here. And of course, this is a story that we will continue to follow as the lawsuit progresses. And of course, we'll reach out to the school district as well to see if they want to weigh in and share this. Thank you both for coming on the show today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And you are listening to our monthly news roundup. If you want to weigh in on anything, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And let's move on to another topic. Joining us now from South Dakota is Harold Frazier. He's the chairman of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe. Chairman Frazier, thanks again for joining us on Native America Calling.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, we've had a number of really interesting conversations today about misunderstandings about Native history, about Native culture, Lakota culture. I'm wondering, you know, what you can add to this conversation about fireworks at Mount Rushmore.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I that's one of the things that I've been saying and that I've learned over the years is that, you know, this non-Indian society, they really, you know, they definitely don't have an understanding or even respect for not only our culture, but our ways of our lives, our ways and our ceremonies. I've learned that and seen that throughout the years that, you know, they just strongly believe that we're all the same and we all should bow and, you know, down to, you know, to them, their government. And, so it's been interesting, but yeah, that's what I think. I think it's just a lack of respect towards us.
Well, for our listeners who don't know, can you, and whatever you feel comfortable sharing about the significance of the Black Hills and why a fireworks display at Mount Rushmore would be not something that your tribe would support?
Well, you know, we've believed that, and through our creation stories and our ceremonies, you know, the Black Hills is the most sacred lands of the Sioux Nation. And there's different sites that really have significant meanings to our people. And throughout the years, a lot of our people go in there and they be by themselves or just family. They go pray, pick medicines. And it's not good to, you know, when we go in to pray, you know, we like silence, tranquility, peace, you know, so we could really focus and really say our prayers. So so by having fireworks there at any time, you know, because every day in our culture we pray. So, you know, we just want to make sure that our people are not can go out and pray whenever they choose to.
Is there a possibility also that the fireworks display would be a forest fire concern?
Yeah, I mean, I know that back in, I believe, in April, March, April, there was a pretty good fire out there, and I know even the Rapid City was, you know, on alert, and some of the places had to get evacuated, and, you know, so there's that potential there, that fire, because it's been pretty dry. I was looking at the drought monitor, and, you know, on them drought levels, a lot of our areas were in D3 and 4, so it's pretty dry out there. I mean, we're thankful for the rains that we've been receiving lately, but still, it's still pretty dry. And not only that, you know, just the chemicals that's still in the sky, you know, could, you know, hurt a lot of our plants and things like that. So there is a huge concern that why we shouldn't have, you know, fireworks out there in the Black Hills.
And, you know, I can understand that, but I'm wondering if you thought about the governor's position that, you know, Mount Rushmore is considered a really significant place for celebrating, you know, the so-called founding fathers of the United States, and a fireworks display on the 4th of July, Declaration of Independence, right? I mean, is there any kind of compromise? Is, you know, like a celebration without the fireworks or something like that? Or would you just prefer that nothing occur there?
Yeah, I prefer nothing. You know, it may have been their independence, but it was the start of our, you know, of us losing a lot of things. So I don't really value, you know, personally, I don't really value, you know, independence. I know it's been a tradition throughout our families, you know, it's been, you know, forced on us. And if I recall right, too, I remember I read a regulation from the government back in the late 1890s that said that they were going to teach our children, our people, how to be patriotic to this country. But we don't need to be taught. You know, we're already patriots to this country. You know, I've heard from time after time from a lot of our elders that we were here first. And every time something happens, you know, we're always the first to stand up. So we don't, you know, it's just our way of life. And we don't have to advertise it, you know. So I'd prefer nothing happening out there.
Well, I did reach out to the governor's office to invite them to invite her to be on the show today. Chairman Fraser, how's your relationship with the governor of South Dakota?
Well, I haven't. I would say there's really no relationship at all. I haven't had any type of conversation with her since back in April of this of last year. So over a year, I haven't talked to her in over a year.
Well, we'll keep an eye on this as the lawsuit progresses. And Chairman Fraser, thank you so much for joining the show today. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me, and I wish you a good day.
All right. And this is our monthly news roundup show today. If you want to get in on our conversation, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. I see we have a few calls. So after the break, we'll take a few calls. And then I'm going to talk with my colleague, Andy Murphy, about a corn podcast that she worked on recently, which I think is pretty cool. And if you have something you'd like us to feature on our show, send us an email, comments@nativeamericacalling.com.
Support by the American Indian College Fund, who have been providing scholarships and other support to Native students of every age for over 30 years. Scholarship applications for the upcoming school year are being accepted through May 31st at collegefund.org. That's collegefund.org or by phone at 800-766-FUND. Application deadline is May 31st.
You're tuned in to Native America Calling. I'm senior producer Monica Brain. It is our monthly news roundup. And let's take a couple of calls before we move on to our next topic. Let's go to Debbie in Rosebud, tuned in on KOYA. Hey there, Debbie.
Good afternoon. I just want to make a short comment on that haircutting.
Yeah, go for it.
I was brought up that nobody is supposed to touch your children's hair. Just immediate family or person you choose, because there's protocols that come with that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, person cutting it might be have bad thoughts or negative or, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard that too, Debbie. Thanks so much for giving us a call and tuning in on KOYA. We've got another call. We've got Guy in Idaho. Hey there, Guy.
Hey, Monica. How are you?
I'm good. What are you thinking about?
I love this program, and I'll tell you what, I am not Native American, but I've been following Native American teachings. There's some great work called Meditations by Native American Elders that I love. I'm really disturbed by the fact that the people who, my ancestors who came to this country, were the first immigrants, and yet we talk today about immigrants as if it's a problem. I find that there's one thing I find. This is a self-confession about my group of people, is that the one thing that's missing from so many, not only politicians, but Americans, that Native Americans have is humility. So all the Native American people I've heard talk on this program are extremely humble. That, to me, is a highly desirable trait for all mankind. So I have a problem, first of all, with the fact that there's this pompous, I'm speaking from me, but I feel like I should be speaking for all Caucasians who are in this country. We came here second. All the tribes of the Native American people were here for eons of time, and suddenly we've come into this country as immigrants, looking for a place for our own freedom. We have an opportunity. We had many opportunities to have a peaceable coexistence, and who are the people who were dishonest? Who are the people who were violent? I'm very frustrated by this lack, and it doesn't go just to Native Americans. This is a real problem. When we take our personal frustrations out on whether they're Native American or Asian or Black, it really troubles me.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah, I hear you. Guy, I hear you on that. And I thank you for calling in and sharing your comments and tuning in Idaho. I really appreciate it. Well, we are at the end of the hour, getting close to the end of the hour, and I want to switch gears, and I want to talk about podcasts. In particular, Andy Murphy has a podcast that I happen to like a lot. It's called the Toasted Sister Podcast. So Andy just recently produced and hosted an episode of a podcast from America's Test Kitchen. It's called Proof, and she looked at Nixtamalization. I'm going to get her to help me pronounce that. But it's a process that transforms corn to make it more nutritious. Here's a clip.
Nixtamalization. Nixtamalize. It took me a minute to learn how to pronounce it correctly, but I got it. I never heard of nixtamalization before I started focusing on indigenous food nearly 5 years ago. Nixtamalization in our circle of Native foodies is testament to indigenous intelligence and the erasure of our intelligence in science and global cuisine. Nobody really thinks about nixtamalization because you don't see it in the taco or nacho making process. It's the step before that. It's actually a very important chemical treatment of corn that was developed by indigenous people thousands of years ago. I wanted to try it for myself because I had a jar of beautiful Hopi blue corn in my pantry. Let me tell you about this corn real quick. I bought a gallon-sized Ziploc bag full of dark blue, almost black corn from a vendor at a flea market in Loop, Arizona. That's on the Navajo Reservation. Now, I grew up on the New Mexico side of the Navajo Reservation, which is very different from the Arizona side and from Loop. If you think about the desert scenes in the Looney Tunes show about the coyote and the roadrunner, that's what Loop, Arizona looks like. It's a beautiful, reddish landscape with mesas and barely any vegetation. This desert is my home. I was on a road trip across the reservation during monsoon season to do some reporting for my podcast, and I came across this vendor who had a table full of different types of corn, melon seeds, and homemade breads and pies. The beautiful drive, the rain, and the sweet desert smell made my purchase very special.
And that was Andy Murphy on the America's Test Kitchen podcast called Proof. Joining us here in the studio is Andy. She is overlord of the Toasted Sister podcast, and she's Navajo. Hey there, Andy. Nice to be in the same room with you.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. I know I had you call me overlord, but I'm the creator, producer, and host of the Toasted Sister podcast.
Yeah. And so I really loved this episode that you created for America's Test Kitchen. I learned so much. First of all, I did not know anything about how corn is, it needs some help nutritionally. So tell us about it.
Yeah. So, thousands of years ago, indigenous people in Mexico invented nixtamalization. They figured, they cultivated corn, first of all, and then they figured that it needs some help. They came up with this process of nixtamalization. It's creating an alkaline solution and soaking the corn in the solution, and that process, that chemical scientific process, breaks down like the outer hull of the corn, and that hull is what keeps in a lot of like vitamins. There's one called niacin that is very important for just overall human nutrition. So that process releases the niacin and gives you a lot of good good, healthy corn. And it also makes the corn very pliable. It turns it into all kinds of different corn products like pozole, masa for, tacos or anything like that. definitely, it makes it a lot more flavorful as well. And I did that process physically in my kitchen for this episode, and that was the most exciting thing I ever did in my kitchen, I think.
Yeah, you took the corn and now did you grind it by hand?
No, I didn't. I probably, I didn't don't have that kind of grinder. But I used a meat grinder.
Oh, yeah.
I used a meat grinder and ran it through like 3 times to get a really fine paste at the end. And from that paste, I made it into balls. And then I got a tortilla press, pressed out some tortillas, cooked it on a stove, and that first bite of the first tortilla I ever made from, Hopi, Arizona, all the way to, this finished tortilla, it was so good. It was so satisfying.
Yeah, there's something about making your own food and adding hours to the process, because it took quite a while for you to get to that.
Yeah, it did.
Get to your tacos.
Yeah. And it wasn't just like the cooking process. It was also talking to chefs all across the country. I talked to a Mohawk chef over in South Carolina. I talked to a Mixtec chef over in Holyoke. What is that? Connecticut, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I talked to some folks from El Paso, and I just love El Paso. And in this whole process, I discovered the best tacos I've ever had in my whole life in El Paso.
All right. So Andy's recommendation for the best tacos, folks in Albuquerque are ready to throw down on you on this one.
Yeah.
Oh, but I'm so interested. One of the things that I learned from this podcast was that, corn, of course, is the thing that we gave to the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
After Columbus got lost and ended up here. And it really, folks were just eating the corn and not using this process. And it created this nutritional deficiency. It was called
pellagra.
Pellagra. I was going to say polenta.
Yeah, pellagra.
What is that?
Pellagra is a niacin deficiency.
Okay.
It's really just a awful way to go. You're basically starving to death. So, when Europeans got a hold of corn, they didn't bother to ask Native Americans about nixtamalization. They just took it and started growing it. And since it's so abundant and it grows, pretty quick, a lot of poor people, a lot of European poor people, then American, poor people were eating it every day. That was like their main source of food. And it didn't have any nutrition, didn't have any niacin, didn't have what you would get from nixtamalization. So they started getting sick. And I thought, it's maybe just a stomach ache and, all kinds of digestive stuff, and then they die. It is that, but at the same time, their skin just turns into like this rotting zombie kind of skin.
Oh,
at the same time.
That's disgusting.
That's what I discovered researching pellagra. So it's a horrible way to go. Thousands of people died like this long time ago. And there was, back in, I think, the 30s, a professor over in Wisconsin, he finally, started asking questions and doing some research and figured out that it was a nutritional, vitamin deficiency. And, and the whole podcast episode is also about the erasure of Native food in food science, in science,
mm-hmm.
Because we already knew this, indigenous food people already knew this, and nixtamalization comes from Mexico, but up here in North America, we did different kinds of nixtamalization. Like in Navajo, where I'm from, we mix ash with our corn products. Other tribes, they mix like limestone and ground up seashells, and that also creates that alkaline solution to do the same nixtamalization process. So,
if they had just asked.
If they just asked, if they didn't think of us as these like wild,
savages,
savages, yeah, they would have saved a couple thousand people. And, speaking of that word savaged, Santorum.
Mm-hmm.
That I was listening to the beginning of the show, and that just like made my blood boil. And when I first heard about it, made my blood boil, because, in Native food, The world would not have corn if it wasn't for indigenous people. America would not have our gross Doritos and tacos and nachos without Native American people and nixtamalization and the science that we invented. Native American Europeans would never have chocolate and vanilla. Italians tomatoes. Would never have tomatoes.
Yeah.
You know, we would never have a spaghetti. Like, the world owes indigenous people here in North America, in the Americas, like, a lot of you know, their origins of their global cuisine.
It's not, I mean, nothing is what you're saying.
It's not nothing. I mean, can you imagine like 40% or 50% of the grocery store just not being there? That, like, I've heard this statistic before, you know, 40-60% of whatever we eat today has indigenous origins. So how dare that guy say, oh, this was nothing. I mean, you would never eat a French fry if it wasn't for Native people and indigenous science and our agriculture.
All right, Andy, I can see you're very passionate about this. When it comes to food and indigenous food, Andy is the expert, or one of the experts.
Kind of.
Kind of. You also had the opportunity to talk to some of other chefs for this podcast episode. And what did they share with you about, you know, learning about this process and sort of the history of it?
Mm-hmm. You know, they shared a lot about just that, you know, the erasure of indigenous people in global cuisine. And I know there's a lot of discussion right now among, you know, everybody in this Native food movement about just, you know, getting that kind of recognition. And that's something that I, you know, start to talk about more whenever I talk about Native food, too, is that, you know, global cuisine would be way different. It would probably be nothing. I'm just kidding. But it would be just way different, you know, without indigenous food. So, you know, I tried to go and look at, you know, different recipes mm-hmm. for the corn that I had.
Right, because you were worried about, like, yeah. You had this, she sort
special
of tells
corn.
This, yeah, she tells the story about how special the corn was, and you kind of wasted some of it, like, mm-hmm. cooking a soup that was bad, and mm-hmm. and then trying to grow some corn that didn't quite become corn, and
yeah.
So eventually, though, you were able to make these, you made tacos, and tell us more about that.
Yeah, I made birria tacos. I don't know if you guys have, you know, tuned into all the rage of birria tacos, but I made it with beef. I got the recipe from a local Pueblo chef here in Albuquerque. And, you know, that was a cool thing about this whole episode was I also kind of framed it in a way of, like, this is contemporary indigenous trade routes. Mm-hmm. You know, a long time ago, we traded science, we traded ideas, we traded agriculture, we traded food, we traded everything. And today it's still happening. You know, I talked to a Mohawk, I talked to a couple of Mexican indigenous folks, Pueblo.
But trading, you know, through the phone lines and the internet.
In the phone lines and the internet and Zoom. And, you know, 2 years ago, I went to Hopi and got that corn. So that's like modern day indigenous trade routes. When I was writing that out, I was like, that is good. And the editors at Proof, they love that.
Yeah. Mm. and those tacos, were they pretty good?
Of course they were. So good.
So humble, Andy.
No, if I had a restaurant, I would probably serve them. I mean, you know, the chef I got them from, he serves them at his restaurant anyway, so.
Well, we are rounding out the end of our hour. Andy, thank you so much for joining the show. We really appreciate it. It's always good to hear. If you want to catch, you can go to our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. I've got a link to the podcast we're talking about, as well as the Toasted Sister podcast, which you can also check out. I'm senior producer Monica Brain. Have a good weekend. Thank you.
Native America Calling is supported by Oregon State University eCampus. As an online student with Oregon State eCampus, you can connect with other tribal communities through OSU's Native American Enahoss. The Longhouse is open to all students, no matter where you live, and provides opportunities to participate in events, fellowship, and support. Learn how you can join this vibrant Native community at ecampus.oregonstate.edu/Native America Calling.
Utukalirni, healthcare coverage make a yominasi. Kukula yuminaxi, local Indian healthcare provider. Karsakangwafsi tulu, healthcare.gov, nakakilalu, kukula lui, 1-800-318-2596. Unakailuni, Centamin, Medicare and Medicaid service kunin.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.